So, hi everybody, welcome and welcome to those online. So let's begin. Please get comfortable in your seat. We'll have your back straight, your shoulders relaxed. Place your hands wherever they feel comfortable. And if you like, you can close your eyes, either completely or partially. And just let your body breathe itself. And feeling the body breathe itself, just relax into awareness. And from within that relaxed state of awareness, imagine that the ground is star sapphire colored. And soft as the palm of a young child's hand. And all the space is filled with rainbows and offerings from gods and humans. And in the space in front of you is a throne which has all the cushions of lotus, sun, and moon. And on the moon cushion is sitting Buddha Shakyamuni. And he is surrounded by an assembly of enlightened beings. Surrounding you are all sentient beings, with your father sitting beside you on the right and your mother on the left. Behind you are your family and closest friends. And in front of you are people you have difficulties with, people who don't like you. You are leading all these people in the discovery of the Buddha nature that each of you possess. And you think that you're very fortunate to still be alive today and have the leisure and opportunity to attain your spiritual goals. But you have to act right now, because things do not exist as they seem to. And while things are not quite right, you have met a spiritual friend who is leading you in the safe direction of the three rare survivals, the Buddha, the spiritual community, and the teachings. So to make the offering of practice purely for the benefit of all sentient beings, see yourself to be as clear as a deity holding a vajra and a bell. And then join me in saying, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create to listen to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through the sins of the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through the sins of the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. In response to this prayer, from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectars stream down. And these will dissolve into yourself and all the beings surrounding you. Negative behaviors, negative outcomes and obstructions are purified and vanish. Your good health, your long life, your virtues and realizations are increased. Cleansed by wisdom and love, you recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. You decide to develop these yourself. And you wish to establish all beings in these four immeasurable and boundless states. So again, you make a prayer to the refuge field, saying, by all sentient beings, have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. In response to this prayer, lights and nectars stream from the heart of each enlightened being into yourself and all the people surrounding you. These lights and nectars purify negative karmas and obstructions. They increase your good health and your lifespan, your virtues and realizations. Feeling clean and clear, relax a little more. Prepare yourself to gather the merit needed for your spiritual path. And you say, reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, action, and momentum. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since the beginning of time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cycle of existence and turn in your Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great and right and wrong. So you've purified your mind stream, your speech, and your bodily activities, and you've accumulated some merit. And to prevent yourself from clinging to these as being substantially real, your body, speech, mind, merits, and enjoyments all transformed into a pure land that you're going to offer to the Buddha and his spiritual entourage. And so you say, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four cousins, some of them. I imagine this is a Buddha funeral offering. By all the means, enjoy this pure land. Vidyam Guru Rakamayana Kamayatayam. The Buddha accepts your offering. He smiles at you with delight, and you look up into the face of the Buddha and look into his eyes. In the eyes of the Buddha, you find immense humility, kindness, and acceptance. The rays of light go up the 10 directions of space from the heart of the Buddha. All sentient beings, including yourself, are purified and merit is accumulated. The light rays return to the heart of the Buddha. He moves through space and enters your heart. Now your heart and the mind of the Buddha become a singular entity. And from your heart, rays of light go out, filling the 10 directions of space. All beings become fully enlightened. The rays of light return from the 10 directions of space, re-enter your heart. You become aware of your body breathing itself and the seat you're sitting on. You can hear the sounds of traffic. And you realize that this meditation is one of imagination. Process has imprinted your mind with this possibility of full awakening for the benefit of all beings. And just acknowledge that and then rejoice that this has taken place. In other words, be pleased. And then breathing in through your nostrils. Exhale through your open mouth. And with your eyes flutter open and move about in your seat, make yourself comfortable with quite ease. So today we're going to talk about We've got three topics, but we're going to base it around friendship. We're going to talk about the ultimate nature of friendship, the dependent nature of friendship, and then the different cessations that can be involved in a friendship. We're really talking here about emptiness and dependent arising, and we're using as the object of our focus friendship. And this is sort of like an easier way of doing it rather than just talking about the phenomena called emptiness and dependent arising, and we've got to work it all out. So we're beginning with the meaning of emptiness. So emptiness means that things lack an independent or fixed existence. Emptiness is the ultimate nature of all phenomena, which means that when phenomena exist, they do so dependently. They cannot exist independent. So if you take a friend cannot exist independently and ultimately or truly. It's impossible. Why do you think that might be?
Because they're changing and you're changing?
Well, the simplest reason is your friend depends upon you. There's a relation of dependence right there. So your friend can't ultimately exist or truly exist or exist independently of you. So the friend has no inherent existence, and neither does the friendship. There's a relationship going on there. If phenomena could exist truly, ultimately, or inherently, they would exist without relationship. There isn't anything that exists like that. But the phenomena can appear to exist that way. They certainly did to me when I was growing up and we talked about friendships. So friends, to myself and my friend John, like you had to remain, your behavior had to remain the same way. If it be enough, you were no longer a friend to me. That's how I looked at what I meant by a friend. You have to stay the same, right? We have a code of behavior, and if you go past it anyway, you're off. We used to call it off tap, right? Like a good beer. Yes, it is. It is very harsh. It's very harsh. So friendships exist through causes, conditions, and perception. So now, if you have all of you, does anyone here not have any friends whatsoever? Okay, everyone's got a friend, right?
You're my friend, Eddie.
So you all have an idea of your friend, don't you? In what ways might your actual friend be different than your idea of them?
Where do you start?
There you go. That's right. So all these friends there, they're empty of an independent existence. You can misunderstand emptiness, and you do this by creating fixed stories about your friend's intentions. So that's not what me and John did. We had very fixed ideas about what friendship meant. And when you didn't comply to our ideas, you no longer were friends to us. And as it says here, these really solid perceptions of what you think friendship is will cause pain to yourself when you find that they don't meet up with their ideas. Most of us, I think, when we have ideas about phenomena, we always think our ideas are true. I don't think any of us may think our ideas are false. We always hold them to be true. And the objects that we have these ideas about, they have to meet up with our idea to be true. So what you find many, many times is they don't. So this is what happens when we have friendships, don't they? So then our friends do something we don't expect them to do. And when they do that, sometimes we can feel very disappointed in them. But it's actually not really their fault, is it? It's just the fault is our idea. But we never considered our friends might behave differently than the way we think about them. So our ideas are often not in relationship to the objects.
They're not in step
with them. Yeah, they're not in step with our perceptions. Oh, well, I suggest they are then. That's how it is.
Yeah.
We are all, our ideas affect us, and we are all informed by our past and our culture and our family and all sorts of things. So even that should be able to tell you, oh, my friendship actually depends upon all of that. But most times we don't think that, do we? We forget all that. We think our ideas are just right. They're not informed in that way. So we're seeing things quite clearly. So what Ben has brought up basically is that our perceptions of any phenomena are influenced by karma. Past thoughts, past behaviours, external cause and effect. If we understand that all these phenomena are empty of any intrinsic nature and that they all depend upon other. Other usually means your language and your thoughts. That's the other. Then you have to understand that then your friendship is going to change constantly. Which brings up to mind, so literally had this, you know, over the last couple of years, she's been asking, what is a friend? What does it mean to have a friend? I think it's a really good question. I had this question myself one day when I was sitting with a friend. He was in the front seat of a car and I was in the back seat. And he told me he was going to do something. And I decided that I should punch him in the back of the head because he demonstrated to me right there and then he is not a friend of mine.
And you were going to demonstrate right back at him.
That's right. You are not my friend, right? But I didn't. And I thought, just like Mickey did, wow, what is a friend? And I remember that verse from the Thought Transformation. About when people do this to you, these are the great teachers. So I had two things to stop. Was this idea, right? It's like, what's it saying then? When somebody who you have benefited and in whom you have had great hopes, betrays this trust, look upon them as a learned teacher, as a great teacher. So even though I had this wish to hurt him, because he just showed me, he just hurt me, he just said, basically, I've robbed you. And too bad for you. So I thought, this verse popped up into my mind. And so out of it came this idea, like, what do I mean when I've been calling this fellow my friend? Because he's just robbed me and let me know. And at the same time, basically said, and I don't care.
River says she's coming from the other side, saying sometimes through self-cherishing I become disappointed with my own skillless behaviour within a friendship and I'm upset because I was a bad friend.
Again, we show dependencies. So friends change constantly through countless causes and conditions.
Well, that's the thing, that when you get disappointed in a friend, then they just become a different type of category of friend, isn't it? They just change from
Mummy to enemy.
Oh. Extremist.
No, your friend, enemy, stranger. Very fixed categories to me. So but what can happen to you through this, and this didn't happen to me at the time, but later on, you sort of realize that these terms, friends, enemies, strangers, are just conventionalities. They're just categories we make up. And those categories have to meet the criteria of what we call friends and enemies and strangers. But in fact, these characters, categories have no rigidity. They're independent. Because, like, if this fellow had not done what he had done to me, I would never have questioned what is the friend. But in fact, he was friendly to me. But just not in the way that I expected him to be. And in fact, I remember a conversation I had with a Dharma student one day when Khyentse Rinpoche, he said something and the student had responded, and he was quite fierce in his reproach. Yeah? And she never came back. So her thing was like he couldn't be considered a friend because I got hurt with what he said. So I'm not coming back to these teachings. And I think most of us are like that, not necessarily there, but even in our relationships, aren't we? And now when the wife says or the husband says something or does something that's hurtful, then we move it from one category to the next. Which actually shows us how friendship is dependent and doesn't have this rigidity that we often give it with the term. Emptiness is the ground of all phenomena. It's the doorway to the dependent horizon. In fact, they're the same. Any entity that you can take, any phenomenon, is empty and dependent at the very same time. It doesn't appear that way to us, but it is that way. So, is there anything you find interesting about this?
Yeah. This whole talk about friend, stranger, enemy got me to remember Venerable Tony at Chigrezig during one of the meditations he led a couple of months ago. He said, what's a friend? A friend, someone who gave some money a few lifetimes ago. What's an enemy? An enemy, someone who kicked you a few lifetimes ago. And a stranger is someone who did it both in the same day. But he was just saying these categories readily and easily shift and change.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is just what it is.
When we project enemy onto something, it's confounding having a lot of enemy to everyone.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, then.
When you project enemy onto someone, it confounds you to think, how about a lot of enemy to everyone? How can anyone like this? They're an enemy.
So the thing that really gets me about friends is there's people that you get on with, but they're not necessarily friends. And there's people that can, like, be really supportive and wise or helpful, but also incredibly difficult to be with, and they're friends. So it's tricky.
Well, you know, again, it just shows you that friendship is on a spectrum. There's no one thing that's a friend. Yeah, I mean, I think what's getting at is it does sort of be like open-minded about this, like to be able to bring a sense of equanimity to it. I'm just sort of thinking now about instances where I've had instances where something has happened and I really didn't like it, and the next second I liked it. My mind just changed. The phenomenon itself had not changed at all, but my mind had changed. So what I think we need to get at here, Ross, is the idea of friendship is coming from our side. It's just like Ben said, right? We're putting the labels on. There's no friendship from the side of the other. It's just like, so in my instance, I've done this thing. Wasn't very specific. So I'd made a bet on this horse and it had lost. And I was upset. And I walked through the doorway, and by the time I got through the doorway, I was happy about the money that I'd lost because it had told me how not to bet. So that horse didn't win, it lost. But from my side, there was benefit in it. And so it's like, so once they're like one minute you call them an enemy, it's bad, but the next minute they're a friend. So it shows you again that the phenomena have no intrinsic nature. that it's depend upon you.
Is that the same with family?
Everything else, everything. So I remember another time, another instance of this. I think it was one of the foreign ministers from China was visiting France, and he was talking to the Minister of Culture, and the Minister of Culture was really proud of the French Revolution. You know, he said, "So what do you think of our revolutions?" "Tremendous, wasn't it?" And he said, "It's too early to tell."
Yes.
It's like this, right? So
so that's what I'm going to say to my friends. Not so sure, too early to tell.
So when we, like I said, put these labels on people we call friends or enemies or strangers, we have to remember that they're just the labels. They don't exist like that from their own side. The phenomena don't exist from their own side like that. That's what we mean by empty. They're empty of that.
So they're empty of that, but how do you not go too far and then go, okay, so then all bad bits are now good bits?
Well, it depends. It always depends. This leads us to our next, when we come to the next one. What are you going to talk about? Like dependence. Everything depends. No, that's too far again. That's gone too far. Because it's a conventional, we're living in conventionalities.
You've got to know who you can trust.
Yeah, you know, there are people that we call friends, and there are plenty of people we call strangers. And there are others that who don't like us and we don't like them, or we don't like their behaviours. That exists. It's just that they're not, we just got to go, they're not inherently sorry.
That would be what they call Chandrakirti's axiom, right? Don't lose track of conventionalities. It's a conventional world.
Yeah.
You know,
Sandy?
When we were young, people would say, "Oh, you know, don't hang out with bad friends. You know, they're bad friends. They're good friends."
Yeah.
You know, people who had,
there was people would say that, and we'd say, "No, they're not."
Yes, that's right.
So again, it just demonstrates dependence. And so, you know, lots of my parents used to tell me not to hang out at the pool room because up there are all the criminals and the bad guys. You know, and playing pool would get you nowhere. Right? So within 2 years, there were people playing snooker making over £1 million. So again, you sort of make it up, right? And then we think it's true. We think the categories are really true. So we need to find a way to be more balanced about this. They're not clinging to the categories as if they were true. They're dependent. They don't have the intrinsic qualities they seem to have. Yeah, that's right. The main dependence is that. And in fact, then, if you looked at it really well, you could be able to see that, in fact, their harmless was very next to nothing, but it's all beneficial. I mean, that's the Buddhist way, isn't it? To go, no, we're not. No, in fact, the Buddha said, "I've never seen the harmful thinking being, ever." There are no harmful thinking beings. So what harms? Yeah, the delusions harm. The behaviors that follow the delusions, they harm. That's where the harm is. It's not the people, it's not the sentient being. Anyway, let's do a meditation. Again, just get comfortable in the seat. So we look at the ultimate nature of reality. So just gently close your eyes or keep them partially open. Let your body breathe itself and relax. And set a motivation to understand the true nature of reality for the benefit of all beings. And try to bring your attention now to the present moment. And notice the sensations in your body and the rhythm of your breath. So everything you experience, including your thoughts and feelings, they all arise due to causes and conditions. Because they arise, independence, depending upon causes and conditions, they lack inherent existence. They are without an independent existence. So just as a movie appears vividly on screen, while having no substantial existence, so too do all things appear, yet lack, are without an independent reality. Does this perspective change your view of your current experience? You might just relate this to the sounds you can hear. So emptiness is like the space within and around objects. It's always present. It's unchanged by what occupies it. It allows everything to exist. So might this understanding affect your attachment to things or situations? Now, emptiness does not negate conventional reality. What it does do, it reveals its true nature. Its true nature being dependent arising, dependent designation. Could this insight transform your daily interactions? We try to carry this understanding of emptiness and dependent origination into daily life. And breathe in deeply through your nostrils and exhale through your mouth. So what appeared to me while I was talking was, so you could all hear that sound, the sounds of the traffic. Where do you think the sound was?
It's in our heads.
In our ears, that register it, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there as well, but yes, we register it.
Well, it's all across space too.
Does it ever seem to be like in one place?
No.
Yeah, it seems like
yeah,
it's over.
Yeah, it always seems like it's seems like somewhere else. You never get all three together, right?
Oh.
It's always yeah. One. And that's inherent existence right there. That's the appearance of it. So you might say, oh, the sound's in my head, right? I might say, oh, the sound's over there. But the sound depends upon that phenomena over there, your ears, and then your awareness itself. So there's always like three things involved. And we don't put that together. We go one. That's in your existence. Right there.
That's like
not dependent upon the other two.
The column of what is the sound of one hand clapping. It's mm-hmm. like there's the one thing over there, but there's two hands to clap.
Okay, let's have now we go to dependent origination. So that's the flip side of emptiness. All things are empty of inherent nature, which means they all have a dependent nature. So the structure of dependent origination is made up of like these three parts, like I was saying about the fabric. So everything exists in relationship to other things. So the phenomena called sound that we can hear, tell me some of the things that it depends upon.
Space to
carry. Yeah, that's right. You've got to have the space to travel. The thing is, cars are going by, right? They have to be going by. They can't be still. Or else we're not going to hear them.
There's going to be no other louder noise that.
Yeah, we can't have a louder noise, otherwise we couldn't hear it. We definitely have to have ears, otherwise can't apprehend it.
Conscious.
We have to have consciousness, that's right.
You're going to have attention too, don't
you? Yep, that's right, because the moment we have it, we put our attention somewhere else and we don't hear it. So all those things have to come together. And yet, if you think about it, like, that's not what's happening, that's not how we're apprehending it, right? Because we just hear this thing called sound. But that thing is made up of all these other things. Without those other things, we can't have a thing called sound. Even though we need the word sound. Without that label, what is it?
And it's got to be in the register that we can hear as well.
Because right.
There's probably heaps of sounds and we're just not.
We don't hear them at all.
Can't hear them.
Right. So everything exists in relationship to other things. So this is particularly important with friendships. Right? That's why we have new friends and we lose present friends. And while we hold our present friends. If all the conditions are in place, we have someone we call a friend. If things phenomena change, first we call a friend can no longer look at us as a friend, or we could change and go, that's not my friend anymore. But
that can happen very quickly and regularly. Like I have a friend who has a boyfriend, and if I don't see her for a couple of weeks, she hasn't got a boyfriend. You know, he's an ex-boyfriend. And then I see her again, and he's boyfriend again. And he goes back and forth, and I get out of sync with it. I'm like, oh, yeah, he's not a boyfriend. Okay. Oh, he's a boyfriend. That's cool. That's good.
Yeah, so the phenomena, the terms they use in Buddhism to describe this other things, the things are called causes and conditions, the parts of a friendship, the parts that make up a friendship, and then you need the name and you need to have consciousness involved. So when you call name and consciousness are usually like one thing. It's the imputation part. Then there's the parts. So you might say the parts of a friendship require two people and they have to sort of like each other. They're the parts. Then you look at, well, why? What are the causes and conditions that do that?
I think it's going to be more than that. You've got more parts.
Millions of parts. Millions and millions. Oftentimes, it's like we've got to be in reasonably close proximity, don't we? Because if one goes to America and you stay here for 7 years, it's like, yeah, that's how we friendships change, don't we? Sometimes we see them too much. Much. And that's your friend.
So, how can you tell what the essential parts are?
These are the essential. The most essential parts, and you start breaking them down. Are the causes and conditions probably the most essential part from a Buddhist perspective? is consciousness and the naming. That's the most subtle dependent arising. In fact, it's called subtle dependent arising. Obvious dependent arising is causes and conditions. A little bit more subtle, meaning a little bit more hypo, is the parts. Parts that make up the friendship
so
or
what
the relationship.
If you get it wrong, like if you think someone is a friend and they're not, so you name them that,
you're
relating as that.
Yeah, you suffer. You suffer.
So it's a more than just me naming someone a friend.
That's right. They've got to actually behave as a friend, do all the things that we conventionally call friendship, and now they're your friend.
It's like a valid basis, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. You have to have a valid basis for the names. Often means kindness, things we have in common, we see one another, all the things that we normally go, friends. Yeah, it's not fully real. Yeah. That's how it is. But that doesn't mean to say it has to be lonely. You just play your part in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about what depends on rising is like, to have a person you continue to call a friend requires effort. You have to do things to maintain the friendships. And no matter what we do, they can still break because it's not just up to us. There's always these parts, isn't it? Like it's us, it's them, then there's all the circumstances. The circumstances play a major role on breaking friendships or keeping them. So many parts. So then we're going to look at, dependent arising goes against inherent existence, right? They're completely the two opposites. So what I'm going to do now is to show you how we might see a friend to be inherently existent and show you that that's impossible.
Like friends forever.
Yeah, that's right, right? There's always the appearance of inherently existent friends, but they cannot actually exist in that way. And so there's a very simple way that you can do this. And it's called the fourfold negation. So I'll show you what these are. So self-arising is illogical. So normally when you do this, we're doing it with friendship, but what you can do is you do it with something much simpler. So we'll do it with something simple and just move straight across to the friend, right? So it's a, if friends were inherently existent, they would always be friends, right? They would produce friendship again and again and again and again. So that what the Buddhists have done, they start with something simple. They take a seed and they say, okay, if a seed could arise from itself, it would just be, seeds would produce seeds. They don't do that.
Well, not immediately.
No, that's right. They have to turn their attention to other things. And that seed doesn't produce the seeds that come afterwards. It's from something else. So the seed does not produce itself. So then, okay, so take a friendship, take a friend. Does the friend produce himself like forever?
I'm pretty sure there's some influencers that reckon that.
with family, even though you have differences, you tend to stick with them.
Yeah, this is we're asking something a little bit different here, Ross.
Yeah.
So a friend cannot produce themselves to be your friend forever and ever, just going from themselves. Mm-hmm. Right? They don't. And no one does that. So that's okay. So they can't produce themselves, so inherent friendship doesn't work like that. Then does friendship arise from something other than the friend?
No,
it can't. That is right. So it's all fun. So just look at inherent friendship event. It's not dependent friendship. We're looking at inherent friendship. But yeah, so now again, if you put it both together, would we have a friend? The answer is no, because I want someone who really featured both sides. You put them together, we've just got two no's. We had a no singly, we had a no singly. Two no's, that doesn't produce a yes. Now that doesn't make any sense. The last one is, without causes and conditions. Can you have a friendship without causes and conditions? No. So inherent friendship cannot exist. Only dependent friendships can exist. Now, if friendships exist at all, they do so dependently, not inherently. Yes?
Thinking of the idea of being, like, ever friend, or forever.
That's right.
Or, like, ever friend, right?
Yeah.
Unchanging friend. That letting that sink in for me, and I'm noticing anxiety rise.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It's like, why would you want to? Like, we're supposed to change.
Yeah, we can't help but change.
And having an ever friend at five, follows you around and wants to hang out with you and play, like, throw rocks at birds and, you know, like, the stuff that was fun when you're five, like, you know, that same thing when you're 20, going out partying. Why would you want that kind of a thing when you're in your 30s and 40s?
Well, we watched The Talented Mr. Ripley last night, and that's how Ripley came across to me. This guy's
a
forever friend, man. He was like freaky, that fella. You know, and the guy who was with was going like, ooh, like, you know, you're a little creepy, man. You bet you he is. Is he like the forever friend? He was my forever brother.
See, it also strikes me too that because of the that you need the conditions right, there's so many times where you could have been friends with people. But it just doesn't pan out that way. It's like missed friendships.
Yeah. Yeah, so again, so it's really interesting, isn't it? Start, you have to think, what do I mean by a friend then? So what do you think Buddhists mean by it? I'm not going to tell you. Well, I'm not going to say it. We'll come to it.
Can I just ask for,
yep.
I have a friend that I went to kindergarten with. And, I mean, I'm now in my 60s.
Yeah.
The friendship has changed and evolved and changed and evolved,
yeah.
But I would call her an ever friend.
Uh-huh.
Right.
I was mainly talking about inherently existing kindy
yeah.
friend who's always going to be kindy friend.
Yes.
Who's always going to be that age,
yeah.
Like a 3 year old following you around when you're 60. It's so
attractive.
I was just going to say, at the end of that analysis you just did, I fell straight into the nihilism, like, oh, well, that means there's no friends at all. What's the point?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, that's right. This is,
yeah,
we're right about that.
Yeah.
It's hard to hold that sort of middle ground because you can have friends like go across for a long, long time. So it's interesting to think about that. It's like, what is it that I keep calling them my friend? Well, there are these things. So there's causes there for it. So there's karma, afflictions, but there's also positive qualities also. The self is the person that we are friendly with. Ourselves and the self of the other. So this self depends upon causes. There's the physical and mental components within the body and the mind, of course, and the conceptual designation, the name friend. This is what they call a sociolinguistic convention, the name friend. Now, but still at the same time, remember our words and our actions are influenced, have an influence. Our friends does too.
Yeah, this is where it gets really complicated.
Well, always what makes it complicated is, I'll come back to what you were saying before about So from a Buddhist perspective, what do you think a friend is? Well, in fact, the way I look at this from a much larger perspective is, in fact, every sentient being is your friend. And they always have been. They've been your mothers, and not only that, but without them, you cannot achieve enlightenment. All these people are friends because they contribute to your enlightenment. Without them, it's impossible. So that's an easy, simple way of looking at them as being friends. Everyone is a friend.
Yeah, explain that, because
and it's a dependent friend.
Well, it's better having everyone your friend than nobody your friend, Ben.
Let's go, Ben.
Even Jane Benz.
So this, there's somebody who's our friend, right? So that's the self, and we are ourselves. So this self, like I said, is a mere designation. If you really look for the person you're calling a friend, you're not going to find them. You ask that why? It's because you're imputing that term to them. It's not there from the side. They don't objectively exist. And often we're looking for an objective friend. There's not one there. That's why we don't find one. There is one dependently there when we give them the name. That's our friend.
So we also think we know our friends, but I mean, it's really difficult to actually know somebody.
Yeah, it depends again on what we mean by know. Yeah, if you really wish to know a friend, then the knowledge is, you want to go really deep, it's a dependent designation. It's just a name. There's no more, nothing deeper than that, the name. Mm-hmm. That's the friend. And like I said, everyone can be your friend if you're looking at them from the perspective of the necessary conditions for my enlightenment, for my happiness, my greatest long-term happiness. I can see everyone as a friend. Because remember, it's karma and delusion that harms them and harms us. Karma and delusion are not sentient beings. And again, just to remind us, you know, the self is merely a label. It's just this name upon the physical and mental aggregates. Well, so is friend. So is enemy. So is stranger. So are all the swear words. What we might put on people, they put on you, right? They're just labels. So basically, friends and friendships lack fixed identities. They don't exist from their own side. Their identity is put upon them by us or by them, with the names and the agreements. You're quite right, Sandy. So this is what happens. If you do a decent meditation on emptiness, of the intrinsic existence of people, phenomena, and so forth, and you do this for a while, there will come a time where you'll realize the only sensible response is friendliness and compassion. That comes out of wisdom, realizing, interest. That supports when you do that and you come back out, so that's just the most sensible thing we can do. It's an irrational response. But if you think like, I can see this, but when you do this analysis and you come out, it's like we're here, right? We're here dependently, not intrinsically, dependently. Yet everyone is looking through the lens of inherent existence when there's none. And through that lens, we create all the disturbing emotions. Well, I had the same experience. I didn't get upset. It was strange. I'd never seen it. I expected a supermarket to be super. <My market. laughs> I walk in, all the shelves are empty. Yeah. It's like, geez, like what place is this?
It's dark, the supermarket.
It's not the
problem with
the function of the supermarket.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you go, oh, the trucks are
not alive. If it's not performing the function of the supermarket, is it a supermarket?
No. No. No, it has to do the function too.
But we have the expectation that it's going to be.
That's right. It's the name, right? We call them supermarkets and that all stuff.
So supermarket's easy, but what's the function of a friend?
Ah, to get you close to enlightenment, to bring you to enlightenment. So, like a Christian, so we have this thing, we call it the teacher, right? The spiritual friend.
Mm-hmm.
What's his job?
Yeah.
Take us to enlightenment. That's the role of the friend. So we can look at it for all beings as being our spiritual friends. Anyway, let's do a meditation. Okay, just get comfortable in the seat. Let your body free itself. And then just say to yourself, I am breathing. And I am aware of my breathing. Is this true? It's true. That is I that you are aware of. How does it seem to exist to you? Is it your body? Is the I and the body one and the same thing that is breathing, or are they seem to be different? It seems the body is breathing and you, yourself, is aware of it. Does your sense of I or self seem to be separate from the body, observing the body as it breathes itself? So the appearance of such an I, the appearance of such a self, observing the body breathe itself, exists. The appearance of an I, observing the body breathe itself, does exist. Does that I really exist? If it does, you should be able to find it separate from the body. Now watch your thoughts. Think something. Notice that you're aware of that thinking. That's the appearance of a self separate from the thought. Does such a self actually exist? If it does, it is separate from the thought and does not depend upon the thought. Can you actually find such an independent you, an independent self? Within the ever-changing flow of your thoughts and the experiences of your body. Not finding a self which is not dependent upon the body and not dependent upon the mind. does not mean the self does not exist. It does mean that it does not exist separate from and independent of the mind and body. But how does yourself exist? Breathing in deeply through your nostrils. Exhale. With your eyes flutter open, bring your attention back to the room. Okay, so now for the last section, we're going to deal with what's called cessations. So cessations, we can talk about it from different angles. From Buddhist philosophical presentation, a cessation is an emptiness. It means that something that you thought was there intrinsically is discovered to not be there. So you stop having the idea that it actually intrinsically exists. The appearance, the belief in that intrinsic existence will have vanished. So we've been talking about friendships. So cessations can be brought about through the wisdom realizing into this, so that's the wisdom aspect. They can also be brought about temporarily through method. So the method here would be thinking that your friendships may exist dependently. And therefore, to maintain them, you need to still maintain a sense of closeness, kindness, do all the things that are necessary to maintain a friendship. You wouldn't think that one of the cessations you bring about through method is that the belief that you don't need to do anything because your mates are going to stay your mates. That has to. That's what we stop thinking. So recognizing emptiness helps us, these ideas, these strong beliefs. Cultivating openness and compassion improves the friendship and reduces the suffering. So this idea of a cessation, it's like having a, so instead of when you have a shower, right? The steam comes out and fogs up the mirror, and you come out and the mirror's all foggy, right? So often you grab a towel or something there, a cloth, and you just rub the mirror and what do you call that? Water vapor goes away and the mirror's not back there. That's what you do with your mind, with cessations. So when you first get a direct insight into emptiness, it's like doing the first swipe over the mirror. A whole lot of ideas just fall down and will never, ever come back. I think about 108 of them, different ideas. They can't come back. You've seen how reality exists. But that's on the surface level. So beneath all that, there's a whole lot of other wrong ideas that we've got. They're called innate conceptions. They're deeply embedded in the mind. So you have to keep going back and removing them. So each time you go back and you realize the emptiness, you stay in there for a little while and it removes a portion of it. Then you come out and you are friendly and loving and kind and patient and you concentrate and you do all this good work, right? Build up your resources. And you come back, you sit down again, you do it again. You go back, you stay in it, removes the next portion. And you keep doing this for countless eons, very long time. For some people, others, if of course we enter higher sacred tantra, it's much, much faster. You're doing the same thing, but you're doing it in a little different way too. There's ways of doing it quite quickly, and there's much more slower ways. But basically, you're doing this all the time. But just going back in there and removing stuff. Now, again, I'd say it's the same sort of thing with friendships. You'll be able to get it right with one friend, but then you forget about the other friend. Or you do it with friendships, but you forget the idea, gosh, it's the same with enemies. Enemies don't intrinsic against interest either. It's like my friends and the strangers too. But none of them are fixed.
There's even a thing called frenemies.
Yes, there are frenemies. That's why it shows us again. That's right. So when we have these misunderstandings in our friendships, again, they often stem from these fixed ideas we have about our friend. If you understand that these qualities are not there from their own side, you're imputing them. And they're doing the same. But it always looks to us as if those qualities are existing from the side of the objects. It always looks that way. But if you look for them there, you won't find them there. They're not findable there. It's when you don't look, they seem to be right there. You don't look deeply. You just leave it on surface value, just language and agreed upon things about society. You've got a friend. But again, the qualities are objectively existing over there. So by understanding emptiness, we recognize that all the phenomena lack inherent existence and are interdependent. So if I'm looking at Chris, there's an interdependency between Chris and I, right? If you look at this one, we've got Chris, then you've got I. There's two subject, object, either way. And then between us, there's these ideas going. Before I knew Chris, before I spoke to him, he would have been, I would have called him a stranger, because I've never seen him before. And we'd all agree, it's a fair enough label to put on Chris. But if I actually thought he was one, I should be able to find him. But now I impute friend to him, because I've known him much longer now. We've had good conversations. And I think I'm friendly towards Chris. Yeah. If something were to suddenly happen, I'm pretty confident myself that I've never called Chris an enemy. I would never have this sort of, the strong things we do, haven't we? Don't like people. Yeah, I think I have enough now to go that Chris is always, whatever happens, he will always be seeking happiness. And that's a given. And it, what was I saying?
No enemy.
It can't be an enemy, that's impossible. And I wouldn't call him one either. I would just think, no, things have changed, and now he's been finding his way in a different way than what we previously had together.
So Eddie, if we think, okay, so all sentient beings can be a friend of a sort, how do you figure out who to hang out with?
Well, basically it depends upon your feelings. And
not help.
Well, it's how it works.
Yeah, that's
right?
Anyway.
If you feel a pleasant thing between them, you like them. And then a little bit more, they do some nice things for you, you do some nice things, then you call them a friend. That's how it works.
I'm not saying about that.
Train yourself to see beyond that. Like, one of the first things that Holiness said really had a big impact on me when he said, brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Like he's looking at us and we're all in the same family. And I was like, that's right, we are. Right? But I've never thought of it like that way. And I never thought to speak about us like that way. But as soon as you do, like me hearing it, that had a big impact on me. So I guess if you actually thought that yourself, the impact it would have on you.
Again, Actually, Geshe Zopa did that when he was leading a workshop here, and he talked, there was monks and nuns and lay people, and he'd go, you know, venerable brother, sister, and we're all like,
oh. Yeah. Yeah, so that way, and then you look at the gun, and you can see, you know, sort of based on the logic, isn't it? You say, well, if all said you've been my mother, then obviously you must be my brother. Obviously you must be my sister. So yeah, so you do this and you integrate it. I mean, that's how you will be. That's how you approach people.
And to recall orders.
Auntie and uncle too, isn't it? You can meet a new person as your uncle.
Yes.
At least the name. And that's all it requires.
At least the name of their brothers and sisters.
It's even there you can see how powerful the name is, isn't it? You hear the name and you focus on that.
Yeah, it's quite different calling someone uncle than calling them sir. It's,
yeah.
You know, the type of connection there is quite different.
Yeah, so with this understanding of emptiness and dependent origination, we can reframe. Yeah, is this what we're basically doing? Reframing the name is basically just, it's a framing, and we can reframe. And when you do, a big effect takes place. So this is our last meditation. Again, just get comfortable in your seat, get your shoulders relaxed. Let your body breathe itself and become aware of it. So cessations are the purification of mental afflictions. They're achieved through wisdom, realizing the emptiness of inherent existence. You imagine a foggy mirror being wiped clean. As the afflictions are removed, the true clarity of the mind emerges, revealing greater capacity for wisdom and compassion. So think about your own perception of others, friends and loved ones. This perception often feels fixed and permanent. But are they truly unchanging? Consider the impermanence of perceptions. This allows us to let go of rigid views, and it fosters a deeper understanding of relationships. So ask yourself, how might recognizing the interdependence of self and others shift the way you relate to people? Remember, from your perspective, you are self, and the other is the other. From the perspective of the other, they are self, and you are other. So understand this interconnectedness can dissolve our self-centered habits, can inspire, I think, empathy and care. What about your own emotions? You see how they can arise and fade, just like clouds in the sky. So recognizing the empty, constructed nature of an emotion makes it easier to respond with a steadiness and clarity rather than reactivity. Lastly, just notice the expectations you carry in relationship. and you release the grip of desired outcomes, seeing them for what they really are, just mental projections. Seeing them as mental projections, it brings about a sense of freedom that unveils the spaciousness for greater love, connection, and empathy to flow. So remember this, the cessation of afflictions is like clear in a foggy mirror. With each layer removed, your mind becomes clearer and your heart more open. Remember, it's possible to do that. And just breathe in through your nostrils and exhale. So, what can we take away from this? Well, you can reduce unhealthy expectations in relationships. You could also approach disagreements with flexibility and always recognize conditions change. There is nothing stable in your mind, your body, or anything you see around you. It's all in flux. None of it is stable. If what the stability you can bring to it is through your own mind. This is the idea of all sentient beings are our brothers and sisters. We're all family. If you can become familiar with that, that's where your stability lies. All beings are my friends. You cultivate that thought, you become stable in it. And in all relationships, we're all afflicted, so it's going to go up and down. So don't put the blame out there on the people, because that's not where the blame should be put. The blame is the afflictions and karma, habitual mental patterns and emotional reactivity. That's what's to blame. It's not the people. The people are under the control of the afflictions and these behaviors. Look at your own, tackle them, and help others think so. Okay, that's teaching for tonight. So next week we're going to be looking at the positive states of mind and meditation, how to apply them. Apply the meditations.
Apply the application.
That's right. So, thank you. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a guru buddha and lead all good beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, Bodhicitta, not yet born, but rise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. And as long as space endures, as long as sentient beings alive, may our team remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. Who wish granted, wish fulfilling joy, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world, be incomparably kind to his and that self I beseech. May all of your holy wishes to be spontaneously fulfilled. In holding and spreading the Buddha's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you warn the art of patience and is never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, to you, I make this request.